On the seventh day of September, 2011, in San Diego, we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, General History, Chapter 23, The Song of the Avanti Brahman, text number 53, and we'll also do 54. Graha,
Graha.
Nimittam.
Nimittam.
Sukha,
Sukha.
Dukkayoh,
Dukkayoh.
Chet,
Kim,
Atmanah,
Atmanaha.
Ajasya,
Ajasya.
Janasya,
Janasya.
Te,
Te.
Vai,
Grahai,
Grahasya,
Grahasya.
Eva,
Eva.
Padanti,
Padanti.
Piram,
Piram.
Krudyeta,
Krudyeta.
Kasmai,
Kasmai.
Purushaha,
Purushaha.
Tataha,
Tataha.
Anyaha. Grahanimittam sukadukkayoschet.
Grahanimittam sukadukkayoschet.
Kim atmano jasya janasya te vai.
Kim atmano jasya janasya te vai.
Graha grahasya vabadanti piram.
Graha grahasya vabadanti piram.
Krudyeta kasmai purushastatonyaha.
Krudyeta kasmai purushastatonyaha.
Translation. And if we examine the hypothesis that the planets are the immediate cause of suffering and happiness, then and then also where is the relationship with the soul who is eternal? After all, the effect of the planets applies only to things that have taken birth. Expert astrologers have moreover explained how the planets are only causing pain to each other. Therefore, since the living entity is distinct from these planets and from the material body, against whom should he vent his anger? Text 54. Karmastu hetu sukadukayos chet kimatmanas taddi jada jadatve dehas tvachit purusho yam suparnaha kurdyeta kasmai nahit karma mula. If we assume that fruit of work is the cause of happiness and distress, we still are not dealing with the soul. The idea of material work arises when there is a spiritual actor who is conscious and a material body that undergoes the transformation of happiness and distress as a reaction to such work. Since the body has no life, it cannot be the actual recipient of happiness and distress, nor can the soul, who is ultimately completely spiritual and aloof from the material body. Since karma thus has no ultimate basis in either the body or the soul, at whom can one become angry? Purport. The material body is composed of earth, water, fire, and air, just like bricks, stones, and other objects. Our consciousness, falsely absorbed in the body, experiences happiness and distress. And fruitive work or karma is performed when we falsely consider ourselves to be the enjoyers of the material world. Excuse me. False ego is thus the illusory combination within our minds of the self and the body, which are actually two separate objects. Since karma or material work is based on illusory consciousness, these activities are also illusory and have no factual basis in either the body or the soul. When a conditioned soul falsely considers himself to be the body, and consequently the enjoyer of the material world, he tries to find pleasure in illicit connection with women. Such sinful activity is based on his false concept of being the body, and thus the enjoyer of women and of the world. Since he is not the body, his activity of enjoying a woman does not actually exist. There is merely the interaction of two machines, namely the two bodies, and the interaction of the illusory consciousness of the man and woman. The sensation of illicit sex occurs within the material body and is falsely assimilated by the false ego as its own experience. Thus, the miserable or pleasurable reactions of karma ultimately act upon the false ego and not upon the body, which is composed of dull matter, nor upon the soul, which has nothing to do with matter. False ego is the illusory concoction of the mind. It is specifically this false ego that is suffering happiness and distress. The soul cannot become angry at others since he is not personally enjoying or suffering. Rather, the false ego is doing this. Om jnana tamarandasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshu unmidatam me tasmai shri gurave namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance to him and all members of Sri Parampara. So first of all, we should point out that this is a song, right? The song of the Avanti Brahman. And this song has a chorus line. I don't know if you've noticed. The last line of the last four or five verses all ends with Kudgate the Kasmai, and then sometimes Purushaksvadehe, Sukha, Kudgate the Kasman, Sukham the Sukham, Kudgate the Kasmai, Purushastatonya. So it's all Kudgate the Kasmai, which means who should we be angry at? Because this whole story or history is being told by Krishna to answer Uddhava's doubt about how someone can become indifferent or someone can tolerate insults and other attacks on the body. In other words, it seems impossible to him. So this is being being explained how this Avanti Brahman came to that stage, all the way from the stage of being a cause of suffering for others, you know, through his greed and his miserliness, he's becoming tolerant to grievous insults. You know, he takes sannyas, and people are insulting him, they're passing bad air in front of him, they're urinating in his prasadam. It's just like all kinds of offenses that any one of which we would probably go ballistic about. And yet, here he is, through his intelligence and his analysis here. He's going through different kinds of philosophies that explain suffering and rejecting each one and saying that, you know, this cannot be the cause of suffering. So we're still waiting for some discussion on yesterday's verse. I'll let you know when that... Yeah, it was a real puzzler yesterday. These are also kind of puzzles, but they're not as much, and you can probably figure them out with some help from the audience. So the first one, which has no purport, is about the planets. Now, this is a common thing, right? People want to know, what's your horoscope? You know, there's a whole whole science of astrology in India. It's a real science called Jyotirveda. And some of our devotees have gotten into that and have become expert astrologers. And by understanding exactly when and where you're born, both are important. You can understand the past, what you've done in the past, what your influences are to bring you to this present point. And by that understanding, one can understand something of the future. I just heard a lecture Srila Prabhupada explain how Brahmins, traditionally, to support themselves, they often had understood these two sciences, Jyotirveda and Ayurveda. Ayurveda, of course, is medicine, the Vedic medicine, and it's also a science. And so they would give people advice, you know, on medical advice and what's going to happen. You know, everyone. So Prabhupada said, everyone wants to know what's going to happen next, and everybody's interested in health. So there's a natural kind of way that they can support themselves through teaching or doing readings like that. But so these are sciences. But ultimately, we have to realize that the planets are simply like records of our karma, as are the genes. You know, the scientists, they don't look at the planets, they look at the genes, right? Oh, now we know that you have the gene that's going to be likely that you're going to get Alzheimer's or this or that. Therefore, we have to take precautions to do this. The idea is you change your life based on what you perceive to be your destiny due to various influences. So it seems like, you know, to ignorant people, that the planets are causing these things, right? I mean, ultimately, he's saying that the karma is also not the cause of your happiness and distress. But really, the planets are these records of karma. And so they, you know, oh, I've got Saturn in this house, I've got Mars in this house, Venus in this house. That means such and such, such and such. I have to act in this way, so forth. Now, on the material plane, that makes sense. If you're, or when you're doing something, just like when we had this temple, which is now suspended, you know, we want to have the... ceremony, I forget what it is, but there was a ceremony at least 10 years ago now, practically, 1994 or something, where we, you know, put something in the earth, and there was a certain ceremony for the initiation of the effort to build this temple. You know, big ceremony, a lot of fire sacrifices going on at the same time. I don't know if anyone was here. But that was supposed to happen at a certain point of time, an auspicious day, You know, and even in our Vaishnav calendar, today is auspicious day. It's Ekadashi. You know, it's auspicious for advancing in devotional service, especially, and there are certain reasons for that. But we shouldn't be concerned, you know, especially as renunciants, you know, what is my chart? I have to know. We've had that, you know. I'm supposed to be in India right now. You're in, you know, you're temple president, or you're trying to serve a temple president. You're in a certain position. It says, I read my chart. I have to go to India. It says right here. This is suspicious, you know. Or this is not a good place for me. Actually, I have to be on the East Coast for my health, you know, all this stuff. But so it's nicely explained about Prahlad. When Prahlad, you know, the whole story, how he underwent so many so-called sufferings. Actually, he was transcendental to it, but it appeared that he had some pretty bad karma there, you know. But it said that he was under the Krishna Graha. You notice this word Graha appears like four times in his first verse. So it's like three or four times here, right? Graha, Grahasya. So Graha means the planet. And it's very interesting. It means what grabs you, you know. Another a word for crocodile is Graha also. It grabs you. So it's said to be controlled by the planets, right? So, but it said that he was under the control of Krishna, the Krishna Graha. And therefore, he wasn't influenced by anything material. So, for those devotees, and Srila Prabhupada directly spoke to this point, that we should not be so concerned about our chart and all of these different things. Because when you go to the astrologers, that means you're taking shelter of the astrologers. About understanding what you should do and what not to do. I mean, that's the whole point, right? Oh, now's a good time to start a business. Now's a good time to get married. This lady's a good, you know, is the right lady. That's not. The charts have to be read. Why? Because that's a material activity. Now there's a whole Vedic culture how to act materially, you know, in the proper way to eventually, you know, lead a pious life in the mode of goodness and then eventually come out of that. That's another thing. But if you're not about to build, you know, to start a business, about to get married, and all of these other things, then you don't have to worry about it. If you come under the control of the Krishna Graha, then all the karmas, you know, that everything is mixed up, is forgotten, ultimately. Krishna rearranges everything, you know. This is the wondrous aspect, a very important aspect of Krishna consciousness. Is that it transcends, it overpowers, if you will. Krishna overpowers your karma. So even the most unqualified person, like me, you know, totally unqualified to take up devotional service, can somehow become purified by this process. And if I just followed the path of my life, I mean, I can easily see I don't need an astrologer. You know, I'd be dead in jail or, you know, crazy or something, whatever. You know, from the 60s? Come on. How many of our contemporaries are, you know, still active? So here he's saying that, why get angry at your planets? It means why get angry at your karma? Now, you have to understand that he's going through different philosophies that don't necessarily, and this is, I think, we have to understand, reflect the actual philosophy of the Bhagavatam. This is just a list of things that people blame for their misery. And many people blame their planets. Oh, that must be why I'm suffering. You know, I have a friend who's always looking at the different transits of the sun and says, oh my God, now this transit is coming, I won't be able to sleep. And he worries so much that he can't sleep. You know, and you can go nuts with that because there's always something coming up, you know. And then if you act on the basis of the planet and you think, oh, it's a good planet for starting a business, and the business fails, I failed to take account of this other influence that I didn't notice. You know, I have to get into astrologer. It's crazy. So the soul is ultimately transcendental to all of this. The soul actually does not mix with the body. That's right in the Bhagavad Gita, right? Just as the air doesn't ultimately mix with the ether, but seems to be there. You know, feeling. Similarly, the soul does not mix with the body at all. So how have we gotten trapped here? Why are we, you know, what's going on? The false ego is the key. That's the interface between the eternal, purely spiritual soul and this ever-changing material, dull body, which is ultimately dead. It's this false ego And that false ego is the false sense of identification with the body and its pains and pleasures and where it's born, its identity, all of these different things. That's what we work on in Krishna consciousness. It starts from that point. The other yogas are not directly engaged in dealing with the false ego. That's why you have some very proud yogis. You know, I am a big yogi. Perfect example of Durvasa Muni. Right? Durvasa Muni was extremely powerful yoga, being a partial expansion of Shiva. You know, but he wasn't a pure devotee. He wasn't a devotee at all. And he was extremely powerful as a yogi. So he was envious of Ambarish, who was a king, but was transcendental to that conception of a king. He completely used all of his senses, mind, everything in the service of Krishna. So Durvasa Muni ultimately had to be chastised. He thought he was making an arrangement to punish Ambarish, but actually he was being brought to heel, so to speak. A lesson was being learned. That no matter how powerful you are, the devotee who's at the lotus feet of Krishna is always more powerful. He's being protected by the supreme powerful Lord, even though he may look very insignificant and helpless, you know, less. So Durvasa Muni had done so much yoga he controlled the senses, he controlled the mind, he had controlled the air, the life air, but the ego wasn't involved. He wasn't humble. He wasn't approaching the Lord in the proper way. It was all simply a technique for getting more and more powerful. Of no more significance than these Olympic runners or lifters or something who work like crazy to, you know, punish the body in order to win a gold medal and become famous and rich. It has absolutely no more spiritual value than that. It's just a different thing that you're working on. You know. So that false ego is the first moment you enter into the process of bhakti, that's what you're working on. That's why the prime quality of a devotee has nothing to do with, you know, the birth or ultimately the intelligence even. I mean, you have to have your wits about you. But it's really the sense of humility, receptivity, and humble inquiry to the proper source, accompanied by service attitude, the inquiring mind, service attitude, and surrender. That's the formula. So you see how the ego is directly involved. That's exactly opposite to what is commonly called egotistical. Right? There's a word egotistical. I mean, that's a common word. Someone who's too much self-centered and selfish and greedy, he's egotistical. Even on a material plane, you want someone to be kind and generous, you know. There's also false ego involved with that. So that's the connection here. So the planets, this whole record, this whole Jyotirveda applies only to things that take birth, and other material things. And that's why when we're going to start the temple, right? It was important to figure out just when to lay the brick, right? The first thing.
We didn't worry about it.
You didn't worry about it too much, but you know, this is as a
plan. But it's turning out better. Right?
Okay. But the idea is that you're concerned about that. I mean, forget about a temple. If you're going to start a business or build a building, and you know something about that, you should be concerned. Oh, how is it facing? This whole idea of vastu, that's also involved with the higher planets and the forces, right? If you have it facing the wrong way, you know, then the personality of the building can be insulted. You know, there's all kinds of these subtle sciences. And you'll never be happy in that building. You know, you have the bathroom in a certain corner, forget it. You know? who knows these? I don't know this science, but the wonderful thing is we don't know, we don't need to know it. If we're wholly and solely practicing devotional service, everything falls into place. There's a nice verse, which I forget, maybe one of you knows it, about chanting. In other words, when you're practicing sacrifices for some material motive, right, to go to heaven or get a good birth or whatever it is, then there are so many chidras that can be there, discrepancies. Chidras are like holes. Is it the right time? Are the Brahmins pure? Are they chanting the mantras properly? Da-da-da-da-da-da. Whole list of things. We're not qualified. You know, we can't do it. We'll make a mess of it if you try to do it. So, but when the holy name is chanted, all these chidras are not considered. You know? In other words, if you chant sincerely for pleasing Krishna and advancing devotional service, then these discrepancies are overlooked, provided that you can are sincere and you continue in the process, and then all perfection is given. Yeah. So, expert astrologers have moreover explained how the planets are only causing pain to each other. So that's kind of a mysterious statement, if someone wants to explain it. But the idea is that, yeah, when we're on the material bodily plane, then there are all kinds of conflicts between the bodies and the controllers of the bodies, you know, and the planets which influence all the... And that's going on, right? And people take that to be the reality. That's what's going on. But the soul is ultimately not even involved. It's just watching this battle going on and identifying with it. You see, if you can identify yourself as your real self instead of the body, then suddenly all of this becomes meaningless. It all becomes just a distraction, you know, that you want to try to minimize. That's why we minimize the bodily concerns, right? And the planets, I don't know, you know. I'll tell you a story. I do know. There was one point in my devotional life where there was a possibility of me getting married. So at that point, by Krishna's grace, two astrologers came to my room, devotee astrologers. And one was Pallada Swami, and another one was a devotee in L.A. who I knew had known for years. And they just showed up in New York. This was in New York, a big building. And I had my, you know, there's like a map of your different planets. I don't know if you've ever seen. It's like a little square with where each planet is, and over time it changes the whole thing. So that had been printed out. That had been produced by another astrologer named Shyama Sundar, who's kind of the main leading, one of the leading astrologers in America, in this country. And not the Shyama Sundar, the old Shyama, there's another Shyama Sundar. Anyway, so I had the chart, which is a big part of it. They just had to read it. So they looked at this, oh my God. He said, no, this is not good. You know, your Venus is aspected by the Mars and horrible for marriage, but good for enunciation. So that was one of the influences that helped me to avoid that trap. So, but why? Because I was about to partake or, you know, get involved in a material thing, you know. Marriage is a material thing, basically. So, but since then, I haven't worried about it. Who knows? I don't know what, you know, I think I'm in my Rahu period, but hey, Hare Krishna. Chant a few shlokas. Rahu's supposed to be, oh, bad, you know, I'm in my Rahu period. I can't do any service right now. That's my... So anyway, there it is. So the planets are not the cause of our suffering. Simply a record of what we've done in the past, and as devotees we shouldn't worry about it. Therefore, don't be angry at the planets. You know, don't rail against your fate. Oh, I was born under this moon or something like that. That's not devotee. You know. Okay, that's 53. Now 54, there's a nice little purport. So that was for then fruit of work. Now, some of this stuff is puzzling because we often say, you know, the verse that always keeps coming to mind here in this whole passage is Tattenu Kampam Susamikshamanam. Bunjana Evatmakatam Vipakam. This is a prayer by Brahma, very well known, in which it's dealing with, you know, why are we suffering? So the first thing is that he says is one should always see the mercy of Krishna and always expect the mercy of Krishna. And whatever bad things happen to us, we should understand atma kritam. I did it. This is a result of something I did. I can't blame anyone else. That's the whole point here. I can't be angry at anyone else. And there's no point in being angry at yourself. You know, you can be angry at yourself and get totally depressed. That's what self-anger does. You know, you become... you condemn yourself. And what that does is it kind of paralyzes you. You know, I'm unqualified. You know, I just, you know, what I've done, my karma, whatever it is, now it's just I don't have any ability. I'm just doomed. You know. But that's another kind of maya. Because that means that you don't have faith that Krishna can empower anyone. He's all powerful. No matter how unqualified you are, how sinful you were, Krishna can empower you. The spiritual master can empower you. It's all your attitude. It's simply a question of surrender. So, here he's saying that the karma that we do is not dealing with the soul. And the soul doesn't really do anything, right? We just desire something and it's carried out by the material energy, right? So ultimately, what he's doing here is he's separating the soul from all of these externalities and identifying with the soul, with himself as a pure spiritual being. And therefore, in this way, he's transcending all of the happiness and distress. The first installment of that, and that's here in this verse from the Bhagavatam too, which we'll get back to, is you can't be angry at anyone else. Anger is really a matter of the mode of ignorance. You know? Anger, remember we were studying in the evening in the Bhagavad Gita class, Kamesha, Krodesha, they go together. This is our real enemy. Here's the enemy. You know? Material desire, which transforms into anger. One is the epitome of the mode of passion. The other epitome of the mode of ignorance. When your passion goes into anger, then you really become crazed. You can become obsessed and nuts from passion and lust. But then when you become angry, you can totally forget yourself. And probably, you know, you can kill your own brother, your own wife, husband. Children kill their parents. You know, and then for the rest of their life, they regret it. Well, I wasn't myself. Yeah, because you lost your intelligence from the anger. So, therefore, this whole song, this is a song, has a theme here. Kudjay Dukasmai. Who is there to be angry at? See? Kudjay Dukasmai. Who is there to be angry at? And here he's saying, not even the karma. No point in being angry at it. It deals with the body. It has nothing to do with the soul. The idea of material work arises when there is spiritual act to his conscious material body and undergoes the transformation of happiness and distress. So really, it's a certain combination of conditions, right, that make us happy or distressed. Right? Now it's a little warm. If it gets really, really warm, then we'll be really, really unhappy. Right? Now it's just a little inconvenience, right? You know, like I know some devotees in Alachua. Oh, it's so hot. It's 96, you know, and it's muggy. And, you know, it's hard to live, and they have to cook in the kitchen, you know, and they don't have an air conditioner in the kitchen, you know. So it's just a little hotter and a little wetter. Well, how does that affect the soul, you know? Because you're completely absorbed in the body and its sensations. That's the false ego. Therefore, I'm happy, or I'm distressed, you see. So transcending this material duality of happiness and distress is essential. That's what Krishna consciousness is about. Ichchadvesha samutena dvandva mohena bharata savabhutani samo sarga yanti parantapa. Everyone comes into this universe. Prabhupada took this verse as an indication that we fell from the spiritual world. When he says sarga yanti, you come into the creation. So whether we come the first time we came or every time we come from the womb of a mother, you know, we're still coming into creation, right? Waking up. So we have the ichchadvesha. This is sukha dukkha. Something you like, something you hate. Right? Samutena dvandva mohena bharata. It arises from the bewilderment, or from the illusion of duality. This icchha dvesha. Oh, it's too hot, it's too cold. It's sweet, it's sour. You know? They like me, they don't like me. Right? There's all these dualities in this world. And sometimes those dualities, those varieties of material things cause sensations to be happy, or your mind to be happy, or your emotions to be happy. Oh, this is good. Now I'm happy. Is it? And sometimes the combination causes the opposite. Oh, this is... So this has to be transcended. This has to be tolerated. This is why tolerance is so important. Don't let your mind get absorbed and completely, you know... thinking only about, am I happy? Am I distressed? Am I happy? Am I distressed? Is this pleasurable, painful? That's not yoga. That's not devotional service. So in this particular passage in the Bhagavad Gita, he says how to transcend it: the ichcha dvesha and the duality, the delusion of duality. Yesham dvantakatam papam jananam punyakarmanam. Sin, what we call papa, is simply activities of the senses, mind, intelligence that are against the Vedic instructions, especially, and that are based on simply this criterion: is it pleasing or is it not pleasing? I don't care about any rules and regulations. Just give me pleasure. This is the culture we live in. Very simple philosophy, hedonistic philosophy. It leads to great suffering, individually, socially, every other way. It's a disaster for society to be in that philosophy. It's not that there's a variety of philosophies and pick the one you like and follow it and everything is cool. You know, you pick the wrong philosophy, or no philosophy, you know, would you just kind of default hedonistic philosophy, and you suffer like anything. You know. So therefore, you have to give up that papa, that sin. You have to know from the Shastra and from saints, all right, simple put that way, what's to be done and what's not to be done. So when the sin is ended and you're simply acting piously, now in this context, pious activity means bhakti un vuki sukuti, that pious activity which creates devotional service, right? Punya karmanam te dvanda mohane muktan, you can become transcendental to the delusion or illusion of duality, and by doing that, become transcendental to the being whipped around by sukha and dukkha, and in that state of mind, you can serve, practice devotional service with firm determination. How can you practice with firm determination if every time there's a little difficulty, you know, it's not unhappiness and so forth, your mind gets drawn away and you're all upset and you're paralyzed. You see how the argument goes. You have to become tolerant and you have to stop identifying with the body. So, since the body is no life, it cannot be the actual recipient of happiness and distress. So the body is a big machine, you know, and the sense of happiness and distress is simply, it's within the false ego. The soul identifying with that false ego is experiencing, oh, this combination is very pleasing. The body itself is just dead. You know, it may be hot or cold, but it doesn't care. You identifying with the body, your connection with it through the complicated thing of the 10 airs and the whole nervous system, which is given to you so you can identify with it and experience it. You are experiencing the happiness and distress. You know? So that's so karma has no ultimate basis either in the body or the soul. Karma is just an influence, that it's a record. It's just like when you do something. If you throw a boomerang, right? I've never successfully thrown a boomerang so it came back, but I know in Australia they can do that. You throw a boomerang, right? So when it's out there, you may forget that you threw it, right? But the energy has been given to that boomerang, and eventually it'll come back and it may hit you in the head. So karma is like that. You've put energy in a certain direction, maybe sinful, maybe pious, and it's going to come back to you. Now, we're so foolish, we don't connect what's happening now to previous what we did. But it's all, the energy's already put in. Another verse that comes to mind in this whole context is Narada Muni's instruction to Vyasadeva. He says, Tasyaiva heto prayate te kovido nalabhite yad brahmatama paryada. That one should strive for that which you cannot attain in this world. Going up or down. Whether from the highest planet down to the lowest, there's so many things you can strive for on the material plane, right? Get a good education so you'll get a good job. Now that suddenly doesn't work anymore. Get a good education so you'll be buried in debt for the rest of your life and living at home for the first 10 years. There's no jobs. Well, what happened to that? But anyway, so this is the idea. So in the same way, there's so many activities you can perform that'll give you good karma or bad karma. You know, there's other things you can do that'll give you bad karma. But ultimately, that doesn't pertain to this. So therefore, Narada Muni says, strive for that which is transcendental. Because, talabhyate dukavananya kaksukam kalena gabhira rangasa. Is that your dukkha and sukha are already programmed in from what you've already done. You can increase it, you can't decrease it. You know? So why spend all your time trying to decrease the dukkha and increase the sukha? You're going to get it due to the very secret and subtle actions of time and karma and material energy. It's going to happen. So the wise person, he strives for devotional service. And that's what Sisavanti Brahman is doing. He's given up all of his greed and his miserliness. And he's able to tolerate all of these insults and all of these worsened insults, because he's firmly fixed. This is the whole idea. This is why this song is sung by the sannyasis. This is the mood of sannyas, especially with this last verse coming up, 57, we'll have in a couple of days. That's one of the sannyasi verses that they chant, special verse. Because and you're supposed to have this kind of attitude, that he's total tolerance and determination, very firm determination, which is what he's showing you. Okay, any questions or comments? Bhajan Ryan Prabhu. Sorry, I went over.
So you're saying that these verses, just like Mahat, when we're all trying to sort out what that verse is, it's like the Avanti Brahma is saying, some people say, so it's not that we say it's Vaishnav, he's saying he's taking his shots at the different materialistic or incomplete views of the world.
Yeah.
So that's the answer to yesterday. I have another.
Well, but I would like to continue. But the problem with yesterday's is that part of it is also what we believe. In other words, if the soul himself were the cause of happiness and distress, well, isn't that what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita? So why is it an if? But there's other parts of this that I think, depart.
But this particular flavor, what's stated there in the verse, is a flavor of one of those nine philosophies.
Exactly, exactly.
Okay. About Shamsundar, just to wave people off. I know your point is well taken. Many people listen. The man has calculated some people's marriage. He's never been able to figure out his own marriage.
Yeah, that's true.
It took him years and years and so many disasters. So, this graha, or the different planets,
yeah.
There's a famous, devotees get into different things, and some devotees, and they were getting these rings with the nine jewels, and special jewels to counteract the astrologer, who just happened to have a brother who was also in the ring business, and he would always recommend you get a particular ring with a particular jewel. Oh, and he had a brother who was in the jewelry business, So, conflict of interest. Prabhupada picked up on this because what is our guy's name? Vishal. Came in with one of these lockets and he began describing. Prabhupada said, what is this? Prabhupada never missed a trick. What is this? And he began describing Rahu, this and that. Prabhupada said, with one kick, Krishna can finish 10,000 Rahu planets. He said, and then in the same conversation, he said, my Guru Maharaj, before taking initiation, was a renowned astrologer. And he gave it up.
Right.
And I heard Prabhupada say in a lecture, it has its place, for marriage. When I was a temple president, we used to calculate for astrology.
Yeah.
If someone's getting married. And I just took the average, because usually I would get three astrologers. One of them would say, made in heaven. The other would say, lived in heaven. And the third would say, 50-50. So that's generally speaking, what is the use of this, But if all three said, no, wave them, forget it. Then we took, or if all three said, hey, yeah, it looks good.
Yeah.
It was a general indicator, So it has its place.
Yes, it does.
But they all had all these, so what was I going to say about the job? Also when Krishna took, that's what I wanted to say. But I heard Prabhupada say that this dependence on astrology kills the childlike innocence of bhakti. Fantastic sentence.
That's great.
Kills the childlike innocence of bhakti. We just depend on Krishna. Just say you had a fantastic example of Prahlada. I'm almost done.
Yeah.
Also, we should know, because it's a thing devotees get into. Also, we should note in Krishna book, all the planets were in a particular location. When Krishna appeared, what happened?
He arranged them all.
All of them automatically adjusted.
Yeah.
If seek ye first the kingdom of God and all things shall be added unto you, we just surrender to Krishna and all the planets adjust. Also, now, this is the last thing I will say. There's different devotional calculations. Let me say this and I'm almost done. There was a guy, he was an Indian guy, big astrologer. He used to come to the temple for darshan in the morning. We used to call him Astro Flash. And he was always giving everybody advice about what to do, just like you said, you're in a Venus period, what can you do? You're in a Rahu period, what can you do? And he warned us that he had to change the date of Janmashtami. We couldn't celebrate on this day, it was going to be a disaster, it was going to be a storm, all the tents would blow down, the Hell's Angels would arrive, and beat everything. It's just, no way. A few days after Janmashtami, He was walking down the street looking at one of his astrological books, stepped out in traffic and was hit by a bus and killed.
Oh my God.
Dharma Sage said, well, that's one moving object he didn't see. You would calculate all the moving objects, you know?
That
he didn't see for his own life. So, as you rightly said, I'm almost done, there are so many factors. And you missed that one, missed that one. Like you said, it would be Rigga and the lizard, you know? You can't calculate all these things. Mm. The last thing I want to say, there's also a devotional calculation. Just like you said, somebody's in Rahupan, and it just crisps your material life. Fantastic. Devotees are trying to counter that.
Yeah.
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was cursed, right?
Yeah.
And he accepted that curse. Fantastic. I will never enjoy material life. So let our life be crisp. Yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah. And one other...
Thank you.
This is a history I just remembered, and this is the history of the Alachua Temple. When the Alachua Temple was proposed, and it was a big jagya to mobilize that community to build that temple, there was one devotee there. I will not name his name. An old devotee, Prabhupada disciple, who had gotten deeply, deeply involved in astrology, and he even had a guru, who was an astrology guru. And he was convinced, she was convinced, the guru was a she, that this is absolutely wrong to do now, to build this temple at this time and this place. And they had a whole campaign, they had convinced a lot of other devotees that it was wrong and bad, da, 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 da. And they had to overcome that in order to build the Alachua Temple, which is, it's wonderful. And now they've got Krishna Balaram there, the only Krishna Balaram on North America, big Krishna Balaram. But just see how far off you get. He was, the devotee of Prabhupada, but he got off into that. And he tried to stop the building of a temple. I mean, these temples had been in, houses had been, this was a warehouse. I'm sure, what astrology is there, to, but of course it's suspicious. It's Krishna. It transcends all of that stuff. So you just take shelter of Krishna and everything will be given unto you, as it is said. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.